exchange of properties on Barnett Street between 2nd and 3rd Avenues on the east side of the street. And last night's council meeting, it was agreed that the city should participate in the cost of relocating the basement wall in exchange of the necessary area on the east side of Barnett to provide street and sidewalk right-of-way. It was understood that the city's share is setting back the basement wall will not exceed the value of the parcel the city proposed to acquire. Formal action will be taken on next Monday's council meeting. Under correspondence last night, a letter was presented to the council from the University Community Presbyterian Church of College relating to the juvenile facilities maintained by the city in the city building at 12th and Noble Streets. The letter stated that the Board of Deacons of the church had visited the juvenile detention facilities and we were appalled at the inadequacy of these facilities, unquote. The letter concluded by requesting the council to take steps to eliminate these poor conditions by expanding the facilities. Councilman Roberts moved that a proposal be placed on the agenda for next week for moving the city engineering office to the fire hall number 1 near the Lathrop High School, and that the juvenile facilities be expanded to include the office now occupied by the engineers. This motion passed on voice vote. In other council meeting agendas last night, the council postponed for 2 weeks action on ordinance number 1131 relating to the tort claims against the city, and also ordinance number 1144, which deals with conflict of interest within the city and government. The council also proposes or postpones action for 2 weeks on the reconsideration of ordinance number 1137, which deals with rezoning a portion of block 146. The council passed a motion favoring a Pioneer Park, which is to assist the pioneers in their current legislative endeavor to secure passage of House Bill number 239, which is to be considered by the state legislature today. The council also passes a motion instructing the city manager and the city attorney to contact local engineering businesses to ascertain the cost to the city by engaging these firms in their case to save money on the city and the post office for the part of the engineering that is now done with the city engineering staff. The council also receives funds on furnishing gasoline, diesel, and fuel oils, and also bids on towing service for impounds and other services. The council adjourned at 11:15 p.m.
Details this morning of your Northern Commercial Company.
I'll be back in a couple of minutes with news on the sporting scene this morning.
Thank you, Bill Wally, and good afternoon, everyone. Bill and I are having an argument as to exactly what time it is. His clock is 5 minutes behind mine, and he's now reached for the telephone, is going to call and determine which one of us is right. Is that right, Bill? That's what I thought. Let us know, will you, please? We're very confused up here. 5 minutes is going to make a great difference in our day today. Once again, we'd like to remind anyone who has not heard the broadcast or seen the story in the newspapers and may be planning on going to the polls at Hamilton Acres Public Utilities District election today, that there will not be an election due to legal technicalities. It's been postponed indefinitely. Well, Joseph Okadara of the University of Alaska Biological Science Department stacked a pair of snowshoes about 20 feet off a road and placed his mitts on the snowshoes about 6 o'clock yesterday morning while he was doing some work nearby. Now, it could be reasonably assumed that he could feel safe that the snowshoes and mitts would be there when he returned. He wasn't very far away. But while he was off the road, he heard a truck stop for a moment or two and then start up again. He got out toward the road just in time to see a red 1960 or 61 GMC three-quarter ton truck going off down the road apparently with his snowshoes and mitts. He didn't get the license number. Vernon R. Wright, 23, was sentenced to a year in jail for operating a motor vehicle while under the influence of intoxicating liquor in District Magistrate's Court on Friday. The seemingly heavy sentence came after numerous convictions for drunken driving and convictions of auto theft, procuring liquor for a minor, larceny, and driving while his license was suspended. Wright will serve his sentence here in Fairbanks. Major General J.H. Michaelis, Commanding General, United States Army, Alaska, today was nominated for a promotion to Lieutenant General. In the new three-star rank, General Michaelis will command the V Corps in Germany, the announcement from Washington said. The nomination was made by President Kennedy, but must be confirmed by Congress before becoming effective. General Michaelis has commanded United States Army, Alaska, since August of 1959. There was no indication in the announcement when he will leave Alaska to go to Germany. To run for governor by the Alaskans for Better Government Committee announced Committee Chairman Otto Thiel of Anchorage today. Thiel said his bipartisan committee has received more than 1,000 signatures of Alaskans from various parts of the state who want Senator Phillips in the governor's chair. Notified of the committee's action in a telephone call to Juneau last night, Phillips declined to announce any intentions of filing. I am most gratified with a bipartisan expression of confidence in me, Phillips told Thiel, but I can make no decision on the governorship before the close of this legislative session. Funeral services for Philip Fouquet, who passed away on Saturday at St. Joseph's Hospital, will be held at the Fairbanks Memorial Chapel at 3 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon tomorrow. Well, the Senate today in Juneau refused to consider a House-passed measure, House Bill 495, boosting the salaries of seven state commissioners and establishing salary levels for the two new commissioners. When the State Finance Committee reported the bill back to the upper chamber with a unanimous no recommendation report, the Senate voted to keep the measure off the calendar. Senator Al Owen, Democrat of Organic Bay, told the Senate the upper chamber had passed a measure which dealt, quote, in a proper manner with the salaries of state commissioners, and I can see no reason why we should even waste our time on this thing. The measure would have raised the pay of the commissioners and of the commissioners. I won't go into those. We've read those enough now. I think in the last couple of days they've been up to a couple of $1,000 and $1,000 in one case and two in another. Legislation calling for a transfer of state lands located within first-class cities, except those which the state plans to use for governmental purposes, to the cities was approved by the Senate today, 20-0. And this was the bill in which the Igna No. 4 Pioneers of Alaska organization was concerned with, the City Council getting an endorsement for the Pioneer Park at last night's City Council meeting. Three more persons have filed their declarations of candidacy for seats in the State House of Representatives, Secretary of State Hugh J. Wade said today. Two of them will be seeking re-election. They are Arthur Harris of Nikolsky Village, a Democrat who filed from the 12th District, and J.S. Hammond of Naknek, a Republican who filed from the 13th District. Ralph E. Ryder, Jr., a Seward, a Democrat, filed from the 9th District. The House completed legislative action today on two minor Senate bills and sent them along to Governor William A. Egan for his consideration. The first measure would put amendments to the state's election code, which were passed by the session of the legislature, into effect on April 15. One of these amendments sets the deadline for filing of candidacy for the coming elections at 5 p.m. Alaska Standard Time on May 1, which would close down the filings at the same time throughout the state. The second bill permits district civil defense directors to appoint deputy directors. The lower chamber also gave its approval to a bill, Senate Bill 221, which clarifies the state fire marshal's duties in promulgating safety regulations. The measure goes back to the Senate now for action on House amendments. And it passed a Senate resolution, Senate Concurrent Resolution 37, which calls for an interim study by the Legislative Council on means of improving the legislative process. Three general obligation bond proposals totaling $15,125,000 were okayed by the Senate today. The first calls for a general obligation bond issue of $5,950,000 for capital improvements at the University of Alaska. The vote was 19-1, with Senator Brad Phillips, Republican of Anchorage, voting against the measure. The second proposes a bond issue of $5 million for constructing and equipping schools throughout the state. And the third calls for a bond issue of $4,175,000 for constructing and equipping trunk airports throughout the state. And Brad Phillips cast a lone nay vote here. Before passing the trunk airport measure, the Senate amended it to eliminate references to the specific airports on which the bond monies would be spent. The Senate had a change of heart today and rescinded previous action in killing a House resolution and a House bill. Both measures were approved by the upper chamber then. The House bill passed would permit the state to hire on an emergency basis teachers, librarians, and other professional persons who are not United States citizens. The resolution directs the Legislative Council, the Local Affairs Agency, the Board of Education, and the Department of Education to study and report on proposed legislation for reorganization of school districts within Alaska. The Senate passed today, 20-0, a bill which requires that all revenues derived by the state from the operation of the Fairbanks and Anchorage International Airports be deposited in the International Airport Revenue Fund starting April 1. The Senate today okayed a bill which permits the Department of Education to obligate funds for supplies and equipment in advance of the fiscal year for which appropriated.
Senator John B. Coghill, Republican of Nana, told the Senate that under present restrictions, the department has not been able, in many instances, to have supplies delivered to remote schools by the time schools open each fall. Two House resolutions were approved by the Senate today. One urges extension of the Cordova runway to handle commercial jet air traffic. The other urges the Bureau of Indian Affairs to replace a community calendar cannery at Amgoon, which was destroyed by fire this past year. Well, the 65-foot fishing vessel Celtic was reported proceeding to Inuka Bay today after Coast Guard efforts averted a possible disaster at sea. Coast Guard headquarters in Juneau said that the crew of the Celtic sent out a distress call yesterday stating that the vessel was taking on water and sinking rapidly some 60 miles northeast of Kodiak. Coast Guard planes dropped a portable pump and life rafts to the stricken vessel, and the crew managed to pump out the water and temporarily patch a hole in the hull. The Celtic was reportedly proceeding to a shelter today under the escort of the USS Kodiak.
Also completed legislative action on a bill which makes a number of changes in the state's Borough Act. The lower chamber voted its concurrence in Senate amendments, one of which would lower the number of signatures required on petitions for borough incorporation in the state's major population areas. As the measure passed the House, it would have required the signatures of 20% of the qualified voters in the Anchorage and Fairbanks areas for the initial borough incorporation petition. The Senate amended the figure down to 15%, and the House went along on a vote of 24-16. Well, that's about it for this evening. We invite you to tune in again tomorrow night here
on and set a meeting for Wednesday evening at 7:30 in the utilities boardroom for the City Council and Barnett property owners with regard to the widening of Barnett Street. And also set May 7 as the date for a public hearing on the proposed setback of Cushman Street. For the Pete Smith hearing, two brief points by Smith's attorney, Sherman Noyes, with regard to the condemnation of seven of eight rental buildings owned by Smith were made last night. Then the council postponed taking any action until the Wednesday conference meeting to which Smith and his attorney Noyes were invited. Noyes said last night that, one, the situation at Smith's did not warrant demolition of the buildings, and that Smith should be given time to bring them up to standard, and, two, that the city should not condemn one part of the city and let other parts go uncondemned even though they were in need. He said that the council in the past had tried to condemn property, but when it ran up against pressure from persons who could afford to fight it, it did not go through. Well, a man who did not identify himself last night but had spoken at the meeting of last week for Smith launched a 10-minute speech that, for its irrelevancy to the subject at hand, stands as something of a classic. His subject, the Organization of Pioneers. He did mention Smith's name once or twice, however, during his talk-a-thon. At any rate, the council will talk this matter over Wednesday and probably come up with a decision with regard to the property. Well, the council did not do anything with regard to the R.B. Briggs lot in Weeks Field after it had been informed that Briggs had brought in a check for $409.16 to pay for what was computed to be the tax on an average dwelling on a lot. Well, Briggs had purchased the lot from A.V. Wetmore in 1959, a lot which carried the stipulation in its original purchase in 57 that construction be started in 1 year and completed in two. The original sale had been made in 57 by the city. Well, nothing has been done toward construction to date, and the city, as Councilman E.M. Ted Cox pointed out, had granted two extensions of time already on this lot. Cox said that to grant Briggs his lot at this time would defeat the original condition of the sale by the city, or the provision, that is, to keep Weeks Field lots from becoming speculation lots, and thus, therefore, hold back building on them. As it stands now, since the council did not do anything last night positively, the city would ordinarily go ahead to institute proceedings to get the lot back. Briggs did, when he handed in his check for the $409, say that he had ordered and had on the way a pre-cut home to put on this lot. With Councilman H.A. Boucher absent, the council approved 4-1 the city administration's plan to move the city engineering department into the vacated Gillam Way Fire Station. Councilman Brewington voted no. Brewington argued quietly that he felt that since there were kitchen facilities and very little alteration necessary, that the juvenile detention should be moved into this building from the condemned and fire hazardous Noble Street headquarters. Brewington asked the councilman take a look at the hall for possible use for juvenile detention before it approved the administration. He pointed out that it might be possible to get state and even federal aid to help straighten out the jail situation here in the city. And as we have pointed out here in news stories many weeks ago, three or four months ago anyway, I think, that the state jail, which is now used by the city and the federal building, as contract is over in 1 year, and it is quite likely that the jail will be booted out by the federal, and therefore will leave Fairbanks stranded without jail facilities unless something is done between now and that time. Well, the council approved contracts last night for the purchase of gasoline to Texaco at 35.5 cents and 39.5 cents a gallon, George D. Cooper for diesel fuel at 24.9 cents a gallon, and to petroleum sales for PS200 heating oil at 24.85 cents a gallon. That is 24.85 cents a gallon. However, the councilman postponed approving the bids for towing service opened last week. The council also tabled for a week the approval or disapproval of a license for LNH garbage service. A public hearing for the regular council meeting May 7 has been set for the proposed 30-foot setback on Cushman Street. It was pointed out that this is in conformance with the Alaska Housing Authority to determine if this will become a policy. Councilman a few weeks ago expressed a lack of interest in the setback on Cushman Street, so this hearing is expected to be somewhat academic, but it is a hearing, however, and interested persons should appear. Once again, that meeting for Barnett Street property owners and the City Council will be held Wednesday evening at 7:30, and this will be in the Fairbanks Municipal Utility System boardroom. Another matter is the council located an exchange of work for property along Barnett Street with a Northern Commercial Company. The city also approved contracts for the appraisal of property on Noble Street for the whitening to John Pasley for $1,200 plus $50 a day for court testimony, and to Early Cook for $1,975 for the 21 parcels on Barnett. Mayor Rebar asked where the school budget was last night, and he said for the deadline is getting close and the millage rate must be set, and here the council is going to wind up once again with a school budget right up against the deadline with no time to consider it. However, some councilman remarked that the council will take the time to consider a deadline or no deadline. Senator Jack Coghill, minority leader in the Alaska State Senate, in a statement released in Fairbanks today, states that he is considering entering his candidacy in a statewide political office for the August 14 primary. Coghill, a longtime prominent Republican who has been in Anchorage consulting with supporters in that community, returned to his Nenana home late Monday night. The 37-year-old resident of Nenana declined to state what office he was considering at this time. Coghill is a longtime merchant in Nenana, makes his home there and with his wife, Frances, and their six children. We're going to have to hurry along. Funeral services will be held this afternoon at 1 o'clock in the Eagles Hall for Andrew A. Anderson, who died Saturday in St. Joseph's Hospital. The service will be under the auspices of the Eagles Lodge, of which Anderson was a member.
This is April the 23rd on Monday, and today this is a memorandum of some activities in interest of the Pioneer Pedro Monument and the Pioneer Park Project and the Pioneer Welfare Committee. Harry Hughes, Andy Wicken, Frank Young, and Jimmy McDonald made a trip out to Carl Main's packing plant on the Badger Road. And Jimmy McDonald made arrangements for them to receive wild game meat, moose and buffalo or other game meat for the use of the welfare cases of the Pioneers. And Mr. Main is going to cut up and store the meat there for the Pioneers at no charge. And the wildlife will deliver any game from the Alaska Railroad that have been hit by the trains, as long as the meat is edible and good for its preservation. And then we went to the Bureau of Public Roads office and got some information in regard to the survey and the moving of the Steese Highway in the neighborhood of Pedro Monument. And we were given some instructions on what was desired. The Bureau of Roads would like some suggestions or some indication of what the pioneers would like done. There'll be a parking place, a large parking place allowed there that'll be graded at the time they move the road, and the monument moved down to a location specified by the pioneers. And then we come in from that meeting, and Andrew Wick and myself spent about an hour visiting with Eva McGowan and some members of the Chamber of Commerce Carnival Committee. And Dick Webb and one of the ladies that works at the Alaska Airlines office in the Norddale, Reba is their name, are on that committee, and they would like some help from the pioneers in regard to listing historical locations with some information. So I've referred Ms. Reba to the President Ada Stocks for information and an appointment of someone to work with them. And then this morning before noon, I spent about an hour visiting with Tom Cassantris, an early day pioneer that was in here before Fairbanks was really established, and Paul Palfy in his place of business on First Avenue. So I spent a pretty full day in the interest of the pioneers, and this is Harry Hughes on my memorandum of this day's activities. This is April the 23rd, 1962 at Fairbanks, Alaska.
Hello, representing the Fairbanks garbage system, the only carrier previously in the city, objected in general to another carrier and specifically to recommendations made by City Manager Clifford Norby. In recommending that LC&H be granted a license, Norby said that competition was a good thing and he believed that it would improve the service. Well, the thing disintegrated along about here. Miller saying that Norby had ridiculed him when he called in his office and Norby denying it. Miller then brought up the garbage ordinance, which Norby pointed out had been put together a year ago with some advice and help from Miller. Miller said that although the ordinance specified a charge of 58 cents per container, his firm was only charging 50 cents, believing that the 58 cents was excessive and gouging. However, since it was the law, it should be charged, Councilman felt. Councilman Boucher and City Attorney Barry Jackson both argued that and Miller's firm was in violation and subject to license suspension and fine if they were not charging the 58 cents as prescribed in the ordinance. Councilman E.M. Ted Cox, in his quiet way, suggested that an amendment to the ordinance to reduce the fee to 50 cents be put on the agenda for next Monday night's meeting. Well, this more or less ended the problem, at least for the moment. At any rate, LC&H got its license, and Fairbanks now has two garbage collectors. Councilman contemplated catching a ride back to the chambers after this on an empty garbage truck. Three residents of the Lorraine and Turner Street areas in South Fairbanks complained to the council of water in their basements and sewage, backed up from the city sanitary sewer line last week when melting snow flooded the line. After hearing the complaints, the council directed the city manager to make a full report. Complainants felt that the city was not doing its job properly. The council passed Resolution 239, setting forth methods of paving paving, installing curbs and sidewalks on Cushman Street from 7th Avenue to 12th, Lacey Street from 5th to 12th, and on 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th Avenues. Two-thirds of the cost shall be assessed against the property owners. However, the added amount necessary in the matter of paving Cushman Street to conform to an arterial street or route will be borne by the city. Lester Spaulding got one step closer to getting his clinic settled in a renovated building at the corner of Lathrop and Airport Way when the council, over the nay vote of Cox and Mrs. Ringstead, passed an ordinance changing the zoning of the south one-half of Block 146 to multiple residential, then set a public hearing for next Monday night on an ordinance to grant a restricted deed to Dr. Spaulding, a chiropractor, to allow one other chiropractor to work in the clinic. The council heard Phil Rahoy of Mile 2, Richardson Highway, tell it that the city has been made a goat in being granted 10 acres, which the council accepted last week, by the state for recreational use near the 2 Mile Lake adjacent to which he has property. This is off 2 Mile in Richardson. Rahoy, without naming the map, said a city official had stated in a meeting of an unnamed organization last Thursday that that organization should pick up an additional 20 acres in the area made available by the state and make a trailer court out of it. Rahoy said that he was in the trailer business and that he has plans for developing the resort area, but that the acquisition by the city of the 10 acres, and he said he did not blame the city, that he offered something free and took it, and the possible loss of the 20 acres would stop him from doing this, and the city manager will investigate and make a report to the council. The council also placed on next week's agenda a move of the voting place in precinct number 5 from the city library to the fire hall on the grounds that the library is inconveniently an old building and not substantial, and people steal books during voting days, and this is something that I've never heard of before, and but it disrupts the service. They not only steal books, according to the report made to the council last night, but they take the latest editions. These observations came from the Republican and Democratic representatives of the precinct involved, number 5. The council seemed to be amenable to the idea of moving the polling place. Now, of course, however, until after today's voting. Wachinia Union Station was awarded a contract for towing service last night, and the council is considering Birch Park low-cost housing as a possible solution for oldsters who cannot afford to move or to pay high rents. This will be discussed later. The problem arose when the second urban renewal project was being considered, and a number of old cabins and houses might have to be moved or destroyed. Let's go back to the paving project for just a moment before we leave the council. Councilman Doyle Brewington brought up the subject in connection with a resolution setting payment conditions for the paving project when he wanted to know if concrete paving was to be used, particularly in the Cushman Street paving job and in the urban renewal area. He said that paving the urban renewal area with concrete would cost the city an extra $200,000, and that it was hard to patch, and since utilidors were not provided for work on lines beneath the street, patching would have to be done from time to time. He felt that the extra $200,000 could pave other streets much in need if asphalt were used in the urban renewal area. Mrs. Ringstead said the city hasn't got $200,000 to play with, and the paving should be asphalt, even though the city engineer had recommended concrete as a longer-lasting paving and cheaper in the long run. Said Mrs. Ringstead, since we do not have the money, there's no use talking about it. Elmer Gagne, who heads the urban renewal project, said that the government would not reimburse the city on the cost of concrete over asphalt if the city paved its other streets outside of the urban renewal with asphalt, so the city would have to pay any additional cost for concrete.
This is April the 23rd, report of a council meeting last night. This is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4. This is April the 24th, 1962, and this is Harry Hughes' memorandum of Pioneer Igloo 4 Welfare Committee meeting at the Nordale Hotel in the room of Jimmy McDonald, 124 on the ground floor, and present were Colin McDonald, chairman, and Jimmy McDonald, Andrew Wicken, and Harry Avakoff, and Frank Young, and Bill Basham, and Irving Reed, secretary. And we transacted our normal business with the summary of the report of the welfare members in regard to an ordinance we hope to have drawn up by the city council to exempt these indigent cases or pensioners, retired pensioners that have no income outside of their Social Security or their little small pension. And we have added several names to the list, and we recessed or finished, adjourned our meeting at 3:30, and we were, Colin McDonald and Andy Wicken and myself called on Alan McLeod and Jack Crooks, and had a visit with them and see if they needed anything. In Jack Crook's case, we have a little problem of health condition there that we let him know that the city wants it cleaned up around his place. Jack indicated that he would try to clean it up. That's all from my memorandum for today's meeting on April 24th, 1962 at Fairbanks, Alaska.
far vetoed the ordinance. It is expected that Monday a vote will be called for to override Mayor Rebar's vote veto. It will take five of the six councilmen to do it, and one councilman, E.M. Bedcock, voted no last week when the ordinance was passed, and one councilman was absent, Darrell Brewington. It is quite certain that the vote on the override will be called for on Monday night at the regular meeting. Here is the text of Mayor Rebar's veto message, as much of it as I can get on, to the council that was contained in the letter which the mayor handed in today. I won't be able to get all of it, but we'll get as much as possible. I find it necessary, Mayor Rebart said, at this time to veto Ordinance 1140, allowing motor scooters to be operated within the city limits of Fairbanks by 13-year-olds. I do not feel that the council has acted in the interest of the majority of the parents of the city of Fairbanks in passing this ordinance. Although I realize that the council has been thoughtful and considerate of this matter, I feel that it is incumbent upon me to voice my objection to the granting of this privilege to 13-year-olds. In order to protect these children and their parents, and these other people who may be involved from the heartache and unhappiness which can result from the careless operation of such machines. I do feel that we should start early to replace responsibility on the shoulders of our children in order to make them better citizens and to help them become more aware of the importance of obeying the law. However, I think there are numerous ways and means of instilling this responsibility into our children today without allowing them to endanger their lives and limbs and those of others while they are learning lessons in civics. I respect the ideas, the judgment, and the sincerity of the parents and the children who have appeared in favor of the ordinance, and I have no doubt that, in my mind, they will do everything in their power to see that these scooters are operated conscientiously and judiciously. However, I do sincerely feel that for every one of those who is careful and conscientious, that there are probably several others who would have access to these vehicles who might not be well or might not so well control them, be controlled either by parental influence, and who could be dangerously incompetent. I feel that a child in his teens is only learning to become an adult, and his only learning responsibility is more apt to err in his duty than an older person. Now, this is pretty much contained in the vein throughout. He does, however, mention the fact of the displacement of 350cc, which was considered part of the ordinance, that he said maintains that can develop a terrific amount of horsepower in a motor scooter. And this has been a debatable point, but Mayor Rebar seems to feel that this is quite true. There seems to be nothing wrong in the past methods of teaching our children responsibility of the usage of the highways while on their bicycles, and suggest this as a means for a substitute. This ordinance, incidentally, if it is the veto is not overridden at Monday night's council meeting, then a whole new ordinance will have to be written if they want to change just part of it. In other words, if the council felt that they would like to up the age to 14-year-olds and let it go through, they would have to go back and start a new ordinance through. They cannot change this one, only override the veto or not override it. The new 1962 sport fish regulations are now available in the Fairbanks area, and these may be obtained at the following places: Pinsker's Outdoorsman, Frontier Sporting Goods Store, Sheevil's Gun Shop, Northern Commercial Company, Cooper's Hardware, and Lois Markgraf at Salcha, and the conservation offices of both Isleson and Fort Wainwright. Sunday afternoon, Randy Acord, piloting the Beechcraft Bonanza that has seen service on the dog trail for quite a number of years, will be in the air between 12 and 4 o'clock, 12 noon and 4 o'clock, and all other aircraft are asked by the FAA to stay out of that area, the dog race area, which goes from Kramer's Field out to the Happy area and on out to the east slope of Esther Dome. The Alaska legislature today sent a telegram to the Civil Aeronautics Board protesting any reduction in air service to the 49th state. The telegram, which was signed by House Speaker Warren A. Taylor, Democrat of Fairbanks, and Senate President Frank Paratrovich, Democrat of Clark, read as follows. The legislature of the state of Alaska most vehemently protests the March 19 CAB order recommending reduced and monopolistic air carrier service to and from Alaska. The recommendation is a disservice to the people of Alaska and the carriers who have pioneered and expanded their service to and in Alaska. Alaska needs more and improved service for its development, and bitter experience has demonstrated that we cannot get it by encouraging and creating transportation monopolies. We request the full-scale hearings on the order be held in Alaska to better acquaint board members and the staff with the realities of our air transportation situation and needs. This was addressed to Alan S. Boyd, chairman of the Civil Aeronautics Board. We'll have more news now in just a moment, but first, let's have this message. Thank you, Don. Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Critchfield of 6 Mile Richardson Highway are the proud parents of a son who arrived in St. Joseph's Hospital at 6:33 yesterday evening, weighing 7 pounds, 15 and 1/2 ounces. Gary Lee is his name. He has a brother, David, 12, and a sister, Susie, who is 10. Winning sale. The savings are really terrific. Visit the new Woolworths, see their bright, new, modern store, and see for yourself how much you can save on their many, many opening stores. We'll be right back.
wish I was single again. Young men take warning from this, from this. Young men take warning from this. Your hits till you're dying, and all you
a week later to find the governor didn't, or those of his advisors didn't like him anymore, so they up and fire him with two other good men, Gardner and Roser. So, with Sherrard previously fired, this makes four top men discharged in the past 2 months. It would appear, with four of our top men that previously have been heading up our highway department, that things are in a shaky position. Men of their ability are not easily recruited. We will be holding our breath on this. Next to explode was a report that the improvements and expansions of the international airport facilities for Fairbanks were going to be cut or reduced considerably. A meeting was held Saturday afternoon. Mr. Donner, Department of Aviation, and Mr. Nichols of the Department of Finance and Planning and the Fairbanks delegation at this meeting were assured that the amounts previously allotted for Fairbanks International Airport facilities would not be spent elsewhere. These facilities are badly needed in Fairbanks if we are to attract international carriers. The argument that Fairbanks international expansion cannot be justified is a lot of hogwash. We can attract international carriers, but the facilities will have to come first. I well recall when KLM made their first survey for a landing after coming over the pole that Fairbanks was considered the most desirable, but our facilities were inadequate, and that when they were again, KLM would again take another look at our facilities. We will have to watch this maneuvering very, very close. This has been Senator Paul Grimen giving you the minority report from the capital city. Thank you for listening. This report can be heard each day over the same station at the same time.
The priest
time today. Well, thank you, Jim. It's certainly a pleasure to be on your program. I was on the last year and I enjoyed it very much, and I'm honored to be asked back again.
Well, thank you. Bob, yesterday in the House of Representatives, we had a rather important calendar, and one of the bills that had taken quite a bit of time was the amendments to the Borough Act. Now, rather than to cover it in detail, because it was a rather lengthy thing, I think it would be a good idea for us to bring out just a couple of the important parts, and perhaps have one of the fellows who is a little closer to this borough thing give a full program on it later. What do you think was one of the important parts to the people of Fairbanks and in Anchorage, too, that was incorporated in one of those amendments?
I'd say this, Jim, that the subject of borough legislation is, of course, very much of interest. Quite a number of people in the state are considering the subject seriously, and it looks like we're going to move forward and establish boroughs. I think most of you know that the present law, that is a law that was passed last year, required 25% of the qualified voters, both inside and outside cities, to sign a petition in order to get the subject on the ballot to vote on.
Well, the general feeling, Bob, that this was an excessive amount. I know this conversation went on in the legislative halls and also in the committee that was considering this, and they came up with a recommendation, however, that seemed a little too low to just about everybody in the House of Representatives. How did that go?
Well, I felt the same way, Jim. The committee recommended that number of qualified voters be reduced to 10% in an area where you had 15,000 to 7,500 people, and 25% where you had less than 7,500 people. However, an amendment was offered by Leo Rhodes, Representative Leo Rhodes from Homer, which would require 20% in areas where you had over 7,500 people. That particular amendment went through, so the percentage now has been reduced from all practical purposes from 25% down to 20%, which may make the borough formation a little easier and more practical.
Yes, one of the other things that I think would be interesting to the people in Fairbanks, Bob, is that the majority of the seats on a borough assembly may be given to the areas outside of a first-class city. The votes of the assembly, however, as they relate to area-wide powers, would be weighted in favor of the assemblyman representing the city or the cities in the borough, which would take care of what a lot of people feel is a very serious inequity. Well, Bob, enough for the borough, because you discussed it because it is timely right at this particular time. Let's discuss something else that's in the Commerce and Labor Committee that we've been working on for quite some time since it came over from the Senate. That is two bills there, Senate Bill 258 and Senate Bill 269, one dealing with the minimum wage and the other with the overtime provisions of the Wage and Hour Act.
That's right, Jim. Everybody will recall earlier this session, Senate Bill 23 and, Senate Bill 28 and Senate Bill 93 passed, having to do with this same subject. Senate Bill 28 raised the minimum wage 50 cents an hour above the federal minimum wage, which presently stands at $1.15, which would put our Alaska minimum wage at $1.65. Senate Bill 93, which had to do with overtime, put most service and retail establishments in the state on an overtime basis, which would require that the employer pay time and a half in any day that the employee worked over 8 hours, and of course time and a half if he worked over 40 hours in any one week. Now this applied to employees who had have more than three employees, employers rather, who have more than three employees. The two bills before the Commerce and Labor Committee at the present time are a little different, and they came about due to the fact that information that's come in from around the state and also a testimony which has been given to the Labor and Commerce Committee have indicated that the bills that we passed earlier this session have worked undue hardships on a number of employees and small businesses.
Probably being, Bob, don't you think from much of the seasonal nature of the business that we have here in the state of Alaska, particularly in the interior?
Well, that's right, Jim. I think that we can truthfully say that Alaska is the most overregulated, underdeveloped state in the Union. And this legislation that went through earlier this session just aggravated that condition. And we have a real problem up here in getting our economic program going due to the seasonal aspect of Alaska. They're shut down in the wintertime, and of course in the summertime, your tourist business is a seasonal proposition where for 3 months we go full blast and then that's over. So consequently, we have to be flexible in order to handle the problems that we have. And I feel that unless something is done to alleviate this situation, if we don't make it possible for the small businessman, especially the fellow who operates a roadhouse or a lodge or a motel, if we don't make it a little more flexible, I'm afraid that the tourists who come up there here this year to enjoy Alaska just aren't going to be served properly. Consequently, they're going to be unhappy and go back and talk against Alaska.
Well, I certainly hope that we were able to correct what I think is also, Bob, is an inequity in this thing. And I see our time has just left us here, so I want to thank you for being our guest on the Minority Report, Representative Bob Stratton from Anchorage. This has been Representative Jim Binkley bringing you the Minority Report for today from the state capital in Juneau.
This has been your Minority Report of the Legislature.
March 27th, 1962 is Jim Binkley's Minority Report from Juneau, Alaska at 12:15 p.m.
See Mr. Nichols, the state planning, and Mr. Donner to find out just exactly what the score is on the airport. A lot of this came up since we left. The finger, as they call it, was to be removed. They gave us a lot of reasons, I believe fairly sound reasons, why all of it can't be done at one time, simply because it involves the receiving of federal funds on a particular type of operation. And if this finger, as it is called, is built right now, why, then it becomes a part of the airport and we lose out on matching funds because it's not a ramp operation.
I think they explained this to us, didn't they, Forbes? The North Concourse, the finger that they are referring to, that it was necessary under matching funds to make a fill and move some buildings.
That's right. There's a lot to be done
in that area.
But still, the point is that we wanted to assure ourselves, pin them down, and we sure did, that none of this $1.8 million plus the additional funds that match to that will be removed from the Fairbanks operation.
Well, thing,
go ahead.
It seemed pretty definite to me in that meeting that $1.8 million in funds was definitely allocated for the Fairbanks operation.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That, I think, was pretty definitely.
Well, so that's happened in the past, too, Jim.
Yes, it has.
Then they suddenly find out that the other airport is short, so they take it away from Fairbanks, and which, of course, makes a big operation down there, and then they continue to need more money.
Well, the only way that we can circumvent this possibility is to continue to press the department or the Division of Aviation for the needs at Fairbanks. And the thing that was interesting to me, Forbes, is that they explained, as you recall, that they considered both operations as essential to over-the-pole flight, so that they considered both airports as one airport.
That's right.
And on this basis, we are pressing, of course, for the additional work that we can get there if possible. But it doesn't seem logical to me, under the plan at least that they showed us, that they will be able to do this, putting this North Concourse on this year.
The thing that I wanted to impress up there and get over, and I believe that we did get over amongst us, was this, that if Fairbanks is a backup airport for Anchorage, why, Anchorage is equally a backup port for Fairbanks. So Fairbanks should and must have a ground operation comparable to the one that Anchorage has now. There's no need of overbuilding Anchorage and underbuilding Fairbanks and call one of them a backup airport for the other.
Well, that's certainly the way it was presented to them at that meeting, and I don't think we left any doubt in the minds of the officials that we talked to
them. No, if there's any doubt, well, it's something that they've has come on them since we left.
Well, that just about covers the airport situation, Forbes. Before we close today, I'd like to offer our sincere thanks to those people who have been so generously contributing to the Minority Report and making it possible for us to be on the air. So, from the state capitol, has been Forbes Baker and Jim Bakely bringing you the Minority Report.
This is Pioneer Number 8 Pioneers of Alaska and the Pioneer Women of Alaska. They will make their annual visit to Igloo Number 17 at Nenana this coming Sunday. All persons, all pioneers needing transportation, are asked to be at the Eagles Hall no later than 10:30 on Sunday morning. Those who do have available space in cars are to please check in at the same time at the Eagles Hall. All cars should be away by 11 o'clock on Sunday, and this is limited entirely to members of the pioneer organizations and their families due to the large number that would be concerned. And that's this coming Sunday for the annual visit to Igloo Number 17 at Nenana. Well, the brand new...
That's April the 1st, Sunday morning. It's a regular visit of Igloo 4 to Igloo 17 at Nenana, Pioneers of Alaska. This is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4.
The government agreed today to put up half the cost of $12,300 gold exploration project planned by Richard W. Rowe of Fairbanks. We were unable to contact Mr. Rowe. George Fumich, Jr., Director of the Office of Mineral Exploration and the OME, has signed an exploration and assistance contract with Rowe. Location of the work was described only as in the 4th Judicial District, which covers a lot of territory. Under the exploration and contract assistance program, the OME helps in the cost and the government is prepaid or repaid by a royalty on production.
Well, join us again tomorrow when Maury Smith will bring you the latest news of Fairbanks and Interior Alaska.
This is March the 30th, 1962 at Fairbanks, Alaska, and this is Harry Hughes recording a visitor from the States, Mr. Cannonball, with the Downs Diebold Company, the alarm companies, Cannonball, Whitaker, and he's made a flight up through Canada, the first time he's come through Dawson Territory, and I'm going to let him tell me about his trip.
This is one of the most pleasing trips I've ever made into Alaska.
You just keep on talking.
at White Horse, I asked what seat had been reserved for me, and they said, the plane is yours. You had everything. I had the happy experience of having the Clipper service in the Fairbanks solely and exclusively mine. I was the sole passenger on the plane, and it was a wonderful ride.
Well, what time did you leave Seattle? Give your time.
Well, I came from Juneau today.
Oh, you come from Juneau?
Yeah, the White Horse.
Well, you give your time where you started and what you come in here, and how the flight was.
The flight was perfect, and the view was wonderful. The weather was fine, very little turbulence. And the attention was terrific.
You had all the stewardesses to wait on you, huh?
Yeah.
What time did you leave Juneau?
Three beautiful stewardesses.
Now you're getting off the subject.
That's the subject that I like.
Well, what time did you take off at Juneau?
We left Juneau at 1:30.
And you touched down here when?
And went into White Horse.
Mm-hmm.
And into Fairbanks at 3:30 Fairbanks time.
Well, you was on the Clipper jet then?
No, it was a prop plane.
Prop job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time you'd ever been on Yukon Territory.
That's the first time that I had ever been in Yukon Territory, yes.
What did it look like over in Canada?
Beautiful.
You like the country?
Oh, it was beautiful.
Did you, how long did you sit down
there? We sat down there for about half an hour, but I didn't have a chance to look the town over.
Mm-hmm. You see, they're restoring a lot of historical objects in White Horse and Dawson.
That's
the Canadian government's spending an enormous amount of money on it. And I thought maybe you might have heard some or seen some of the brochures on it.
No, I haven't had an opportunity to get in there.
I'll soon get this brochure, but I don't know what I did with it. They're putting out a gold-plated pamphlet, a brochure, a travel brochure, and it's going all over the world, all the travel agencies. See, Canada's spending almost $1 million over there on their tourist development this year. They started in 1960 with 80,000, and this year it's gone over $1 million, and the Canadian government is allowing certain credits and privileges to the miners to encourage mining and oil prospecting and the tourist business. The Canadian government's going right out and hiring people to do these things. And in Alaska, on this pioneer project proposed here at Fairbanks, Pioneer Park and Museum, the women down in Southeastern along the ferry route come in with a petition that gives us a big boost down there. The women want parcels of land set aside all along the ferry route for historical objects and signs and to restore a fish camp and an old courthouse and totem poles and all kinds of stuff like that, and gardens along the ferry route.
Well, that's fine stuff. People don't come to Alaska to see a new store building or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They come to see Alaska as it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, our petition here, the city council tried to stop us from acquiring this government land, which we did in legal course and recorded as we went along, so they couldn't upset us on our proposal and get the land away from us for commercial development, just like that article said that you read in the New York Times.
Yeah.
The mayor and the real estate interest here and three or four other individuals are fighting the whole town, you see? And this is the only place in Alaska they're doing it. And at first I thought it was just me, but I believe it's a pork barrel deal that they saw a piece of meat and they tried to get it, just like a bunch of wolves. That's right.
Yeah.
They're like a kid in a candy barrel. They're going to eat till they're sick.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's happening now. They have no sense of no judgment about what they're doing. 3 years ago, there was crime because some of us wouldn't do these things. And we quietly took the bull by the horns and had our meetings and got organized and went ahead and applied to the federal government and got this land cleared for us to receive it. And we found out that this little group was going to get, city was going to get control of the, it would come under the jurisdiction and the legislation of the city and the planning board, and we immediately went to the state, to the legislature and the governor, and we got a bill put through down the legislature to go with the deed to this land from the federal government with restrictions written in it so that the reserve would be continued on it except for this specific use for which it had been acquired and released for the government. And we made it all of legal record and recorded it so the city couldn't step in with their planning and zoning board and politics step in and stop it. But we had 17 members of the Pioneers Organization on the legislature at Juneau. They supported us unanimous. There was no one on the legislature voted or talked against the project. It was only a little local group of real estate and ambitious people here that talked against it. And what do you think of that?
Well, the same thing has happened in a good many towns. They've killed the towns by poor judgment. That's what made Boise. Nampa, so the story goes, the railroad wanted to come in and put in terminals and a lot of expensive operations in Nampa, and Nampa wouldn't go, wouldn't give them the things they wanted, so they went to Boise, and Boise's a big city now, and Nampa is not.
That's right.
Yeah.
I had a strange thing happen today. I met a couple of old-timers down in the Norddale. I'd known them around here for several years. And we got to talking about Arizona and the First World War and Villa on the border, the Mexican fights. And, of course, I was down there when I was 16, 17 years old, working in Prescott, Arizona at the Gilmore Hospital as a civilian employee of the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these boys was a captain in the group of Army boys that come up there. It was there the time the Wobblies started the stampede down there in the mines.
One of these fellows you talked to.
And he was right there. He remembered me. Believe it or not. Now, all these years.
Imagine that.
That's a good many years ago.
By the way, you remember you introduced me to a fur buyer here?
Still here, Johnny.
I saw him in the hotel tonight.
Yeah, Johnny talked a little bit one day here, but I the recorder batteries are dead, and I didn't get him on the tape, so I come home and put it on the tape. But he promised to talk for us, too. So I got that story when he was captured over in the Bering Sea on the tape for him. Well, Cannonball, I'm going to turn this back now, and this is just a little visit of I'll call you a tourist. And a little of your expression, what you think ought to be done here.
She, too, remarked that she would have appreciated those who opposed this measure to have presented their views at the time the public hearing had been held. Councilman Boucher stated that perhaps the council had acted too hastily. He said that he took a voter's list supplied to him by the city clerk and had called between 350 and 450 voters in the community to ascertain their views on the subject. He continued that the opposition to this measure was overwhelming. He felt that the council, in rejecting the age change, could consider something else for the kids, a place perhaps set aside in the city where the kids could burn off some of their excess energy and so forth. Elmer Wheeler, who had been one of the proponents of the age change, spoke from the position of one who would like to see the kids in the community secure access through the city of the outlying areas. He said that this is all the kids really wanted, and it was to get out of the out on the trails of the country. Councilman Brewington stated that he felt that this would be possible and that the council would discuss it further. At this point, the discussion became more general on the merits of the age limits and the presence in the community of motor scooters and cycles. And in the course of the discussion, the council, in effect, had a second public hearing. Final action on this ordinance was taken when the council voted unanimously to uphold the mayor's veto. Last night, the Fairbanks City Council made an important policy decision regarding the progress of the paving of Noble and Barnett Streets. Correspondence with the State Division of Highways regarding the share and cost of the paving of Noble Street had not been satisfactory to the city. The City Director of Public Works, Robert Crow, had recently been sent to Juneau to ascertain the state's position on the share of the cost the state was prepared to meet. The report he gave the council apparently was not satisfactory to several members. The position being that the state evidently still wishes to continue to drag its feet. Thus, the council, by a motion, authorized the paving of Noble Street as it is, without any whitening, and that they instructed the city engineer to proceed with the necessary engineering and design to facilitate this project as soon as was possible. Of the six council members, Boucher, Brewington, Ringstad, and Walker approved of this action, and Councilman Cox and Roberts did not concur with this in the votes taken to effectuate this move. Those opposed stated that they felt that they should consider that in acquiring the necessary property along Noble Street for widening the street, they would meet the state standards and thus would be entitled to receive federal matching funds. The council also instructed the city manager to contact the appraisers to ascertain the cost of acquiring the property on Barnett Street for widening that area. Another council action last night, Austin Ward was appointed as a member of the Fairbanks City Park, Recreation, and Cemetery Commission. Rejected a claim with George Swanson for damages of $392.53 sustained to his place of business at Swanson's Corner in December 1961. The council also tabled for 1 week ordinance number 1144 regarding the conflict of interest. And the council passed ordinance number 1143, which deals with a change in the city electrical code that will require all work to be done only by licensed operators when the work is contracted to a private firm and not performed with a resident on his own property. The Russian government extends official thanks yesterday to the United States for medical service and a hazardous emergency plane flight, which saved the life of an injured Soviet sailor. The incident occurred on March 17th in the Aleutian Islands. The sailor was Boris Kozhen and the tugboat Veletilant. The statement was, the Russian embassy says, and I quote, "The embassy expresses its appreciation to the Department of State and other appropriate United States authorities, as well as to the medical personnel of St. Paul Island and the Elmendorf Air Force Military Base, for the careful attention and for the quick and effective aid given to the injured Soviet sailor."
Well, this comes out of Anchorage, and it's for at least today. We read it as it came here, at least part of it. State Senator Brad Phillips last night was actively urged to run for governor by the Alaskans for Better Government Committee, announced committee chairman Otto Thiel of Anchorage today. Thiel said his bipartisan committee has received more than 1,000 letters or signatures of Alaskans from over the state who want Senator Phillips in the governor's chair. Phillips is a Republican serving now in the state house, or state senate, rather. Well, we better get these announcements going. Sorry.
And 15 minutes.
We'll have all the City Council report for you in just a moment. Well, 8 minutes past eight.
The Fairbanks City Council conducted last night's council business in 3 hours and 15 minutes. As was expected, the order of business that brought out the most interest was the council's reconsideration of the previous week's decision to pave Noble Street as is. The manner in which the council reconsidered that their previous decision was on a motion to rescind the previous week's motion. Councilman Cox moved that the city attorney be authorized to proceed under the city's right of taking to acquire right-of-way on Noble Street in that city. Could then participate in the federal fund program. Under this motion, the street will be widened to 40 feet. Considerable discussion ensued upon the advantages of the city in obtaining the federal funds. Edmund Orbeck presented a petition to the council containing signatures of various interested people in the community advocating that the street be widened to the 40-foot requirement so that the city could receive the federal funds. Jack Wilbur, a plumbing contractor with property on Noble Street, Stan Davis, manager of the Northwood Building, and Dick Lowe, manager of the Traveler's Inn, all presented testimony in support of widening the street and paving it with the federal funds this year. On the votes, Councilman Broington stated that he wished to explain his vote. He had previously voted to have Noble Street paved as it is to get the job done this year. Now he had been in touch with Senator McNeely of Juneau, and that he could almost guarantee that the street would be paved this year with the federal funds. So he said that if he was voting in favor of the motion to widen the street. Councilwoman Ringstad stated that she agreed with Broington and voted in favor also. Councilman Cox, Roberts, and Walker also voted in favor of the motion. Councilman Boucher was absent at last night's meeting. Running a close second in the order of business that attracted interest at last night's council meeting was the public hearing regarding the condemnation proceedings against the property of Gregory Schmurf, who is also Fairbanks' Petsmith. At the hearing, the city attorney presented a detailed file, including photographs and the investigation by city officials regarding the condemnation of this property. Testimony from various city officials, which included the city fire marshal, the building inspector, and the sanitarian, was presented in the folder. Over 30 different photographs of the property were presented at the city as evidence of the condemnation. Sherman Noyes, acting as legal counsel for Mr. Schmurf, stated that this was the first chance he had had to examine this evidence and wished to delay for 1 week interrogation of the city officials on their testimony. However, he stated that he was prepared to present the case for the defense of his client in the matter of the condemnation. His first witness was Mr. Schmurf, or as he is commonly known, Pat Smith. Mr. Smith stated that he had first come to Fairbanks on March 20th, 1917, and had lived here ever since. He stated that he was 69 years old and had no income except for the rental of the property that the city was supporting to condemn. He had 8 rental units, however. He had lost all but 2 of his tenants since the city posted the notices to intend to condemn last December. He stated that his present tenants pay a total of $50 a month. He stated that he was confused about the city's action, as he had tried to follow their wishes before. For example, when the city was placing a sewer line at his property, he wished to hook into the facility. However, was informed by the city official that he could not, that he should wait. Now his property was being condemned for lack of proper sanitation facilities. Mr. Smith concluded his remarks by stating that it took him years to build up his property. Now it is condemned. How was he going to live? He could have no income. Mr. Crowley, a local contractor, stated that he had known Pat Smith for about 4 years. He had inspected the property, and in his opinion, the property buildings were structurally sound. And he added that he had about 20 years' experience in construction and felt that with some minor repairs, this property could be improved to meet most of the objection to the city officials. Mr. Crowley added further that Mr. Smith had done him favors in the past and that he would be very happy to give Mr. Smith a hand in improving the property. He asked the council to give Mr. Smith some time to improve the property and rent it out again. In a concluding appeal to the council to consider the age of man and his problem, Mr. Crowley stated that Mr. Smith and others like him were the tail end of the history of this area, and that the council should not ignore them. The council voted to take the condemnation proceedings up under next week's meeting under the special order of business on the agenda, and that the council would inspect the premises this coming Wednesday noon. Previously, the Northern Commercial Company had approached...